वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 6 एंटाइटल्ड द यदु डायनेस्टी रिटायर्स टू प्रभास टेक्स्ट नंबर 22 धर्मश्च स्थापिता सत्सु धर्मश्च स्थापिता सत्सु सत्यसंधेषु वै त्वया सत्यसंधेषु वै त्वया कीर्तिश्च दिक्षु विक्षिप्ता कीर्तिश्च दिक्षु विक्षिप्ता सर्वलोकमलापः सर्वलोकमलापः धर्मश्च स्थापिता सत्सु सत्यसंधेषु वै त्वया कीर्तिश्च दिक्षु विक्षिप्ता सर्वलोकमलापः Anybody else like to chant? Dharmascha sthapita satsu Satya sandeshu vaitoya Kirtischa dikshu vikshipta Sarvaloka malapaha Dharmascha sthapita satsu सत्यसंदेशु वै त्वया कीर्तिश्च दिक्षु विक्षिप्ता सर्वलोकमलापः धर्मः द प्रिंसिपल्स ऑफ रिलीजन च एंड स्थापितः एस्टैब्लिश्ड सत्सु अमंग द पायस Satya Sandesho among those who seek after truth. Why? Indeed. Twaya by you. Kirtihi your glories. Cha and Dikshu in all the directions. Vikshipta disseminated. Sarvaloka of all planets, mala the contamination, apaha which remove. Translation: My Lord, you have re-established the principles of religion among pious men who are always firmly bound to the truth. You have also distributed your glories all over the world, and thus the whole world can be purified by hearing about you. This verse doesn't have a purport. We'll continue reading further. Descending into the dynasty of King Yadu, you have manifested your unique transcendental form. And for the benefit of the entire universe, you have executed magnanimous transcendental activities. My dear Lord, those pious and saintly persons who in the age of Kali hear about your transcendental activities and also glorify them, they will easily cross over the darkness of the age. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, many persons are not attracted to the authorized Vedic literatures. Minimizing the transcendental process of hearing and chanting the glories of the personality of Godhead, they prefer to listen to useless and whimsical vibrations on the radio and television, in newspapers and magazines and so on. Rather than hear about Krishna from a bona fide spiritual master, they endlessly give their own opinions about everything until they are dragged away by the force of time. After studying the temporary, limited forms of the material world, they impatiently conclude that the absolute truth is formless. Such persons are actually worshipping Krishna's illusory energy, Maya, who has been authorized to kick them, to kick their stubborn heads. If instead people hear directly about Krishna from the bona fide sources, they will very easily solve all the problems of their life. In Kali Yuga, people are constantly suffering from many psychological, social, economic, historical, political, and existential problems. But all these nightmarish problems can be removed as soon as one awakens to the transcendental reality of the personality of Godhead, who is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, and beyond the bewildering manifestations of the material energy. The Lord appears within this universe so that people can observe, hear about, and glorify His actual activities. In this difficult age of Kali, we should all seriously take advantage of this opportunity. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayeva cha Padidanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. I'd like to welcome all of you all to the Sunday Bhagavatam class. Seeking the blessings of all the devotees to speak something on the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. This particular verse, series of verses that we are looking, is actually glorification of Lord Brahma, of Krishna. This is towards the end of Srimad Bhagavatam. Practically the 10th canto is over, and this chapter is entitled as the Yadu dynasty returns to goes to Prabhas Kshetra, and we all know that that's where the winding up pastime of the Yadu dynasty is going to take place. And eventually Krishna also winds up his pastime. So this is practically the fag end of Krishna Leela. And Brahma and all the demigods are actually glorifying Lord Krishna as somebody who has done a lot, achieved a lot and purified the world. At this point in this particular sequence of verses, Brahmaji is actually telling Krishna, my dear Lord, you have re-established the principles of religion among the pious men who are always firmly bound to the truth. You have also distributed your glories all over the world, and thus the whole world can be purified by hearing. And he says, your transcendental activities and also glory will easily cross over, those who chant that will easily cross over the darkness of this age. So in essence, this whole thing is about how Krishna Katha will purify people and give them perfection of their lives. Keeping that as the whole theme of today's discussion, we are going to see how through utilization of the human body, through the process of sadhana bhakti, we can perfect our lives, specifically centered around hearing Krishna Katha through the medium of bona fide spiritual master, bona fide guru. So, the body is considered to be the place through which we can perform sadhana bhakti. And the body is considered to be like a house, bhavan. And every house has a particular purpose. If you look at the construction of different houses, I mean, everyone's house is differently structured inside, right? And the houses are structured according to your needs. Like somebody may have a huge hall. Somebody may have a bathroom that is as big as a hall, you know. Depending on what the need is, you know. There are people who do everything in the bathroom only, you know. So depending on what the need is, you have a structure that is created to the house. So God has given this house, the body, which is like a house to us. And naturally when He has designed the house, He knows what the purpose of the house is. If we design our own bodies, we can probably make them function in a certain way. Therefore, human beings have created robots. Now, why they have created robots? Those robots do what they can't do. So the imagination of robots is to do many things that human beings want to do, but they can't do. But unfortunately, this body is not created by humans. It is created by God. And therefore, there is a purpose for which this body is created. And the body can only do so much. If you look at the way Indian bodies are, and if you look at the way Western bodies are, different bodies are also designed for different purposes. Now, if an Indian body tries to do the stretch of enjoyment that a Western body can do, not possible at all, you know. No matter how much you try, whether it is in the field of sports, whether it is in the field of eating, whether in the field of, you know, doing any activities, adventure and this and that, you know. There are different ways. And if the Western-bodied people try to do what the Indian body can do, you know, in terms of fasting, in terms of, you know, tolerance, you go into the local trains, how much tolerance, you know, Indian body can endure. So every body is created for a certain purpose, you know. And that purpose is specifically created by God. And as long as we identify with that purpose, we can actually achieve the perfection of our life. And therefore, this house specifically has been meant for the process of sadhana bhakti. And no matter how much the body changes, the purpose remains the same. In fact, the changing body indicates the purpose only. In fact, it gives a indicator about the purpose. Just like when old age comes, the appearance of old age is an indicator that now focus on the purpose of the body at least. You know, it's too late. You're getting towards the fag end of your life. So the body itself gives different purposes. But unfortunately, different people, when they look at the body's messages, they derive different interpretations. Like for example, when Manu, he saw that he's getting older, he wanted to hand over his kingdom to his children and then go on to practice sadhana bhakti. So when he saw old age, when he saw that, you know, he's aging, He realized that the body is giving me a message and I need to act on it. But different people, when they look at old bodies, they have different ideas that come up, you know. Like, for example, we find that when Angad came to the court of Ravan, and Ravan was a big astrologer, you know. So Ravan tells Angad that when I was worshipping Lord Shiva, I cut my head and I was putting it into the fire one by one, you know. So now naturally he's an astrologer, he can read what is there on the forehead, you know. So he saw his own head. And he saw on that head, Brahmaji, so basically the destiny of everyone is predicted by Lord Brahma. Brahma had predicted that this fellow's, on his forehead it was written, this fellow is going to be killed by a human being. Now he said, of course, we know that Lord Rama is not a human being, but from a Leela point of view, he appears as a human, you know. So he said that Brahma is an old fellow. And old people tend to be very senile, you know, they tend to all make all mistakes. So definitely he has made a mistake in predicting what my future is, you know. So now, for Manu, old age meant immediately focusing on spiritual life. And for Ravan, old age meant speaking all stupid things, you know. So essentially, when people go through such phases of life, we need to really contemplate on the purpose of the body. Like for example, Dasharatha Maharaj, he saw one hair, white hair on his head. And as soon as he saw white hair on his head, he decided that I need to retire. Nowadays, the kings that are there and politicians that are there, how much ever white hair is there, you know? If they see one black hair, then also they think that I can continue more, you know. That's the situation of today, you know. So essentially, when we look at signs of, signs coming from God, different types of signs, we need to remember that even if those signs are negative in nature, we need to learn to take the positive message from those signs. Like a few days back, I was in Mayapur and we were discussing this pastime of Haridas Thakur. When Haridas Thakur was beaten in those 22 marketplaces, if you look at the way in which the leela of this particular pastime is arranged, it's very interesting to see it in this particular way. Now, for a normal human being, when he's beaten in one marketplace, like Haridas Thakur was, for those who don't know the context, Haridas Thakur was the Namacharya of the holy name of the Lord and constantly chanting the holy name. Though he was born in a Mohammedan family, he was addicted to chanting the names of Krishna. So when the king of that area, when the governor of that area, he came to know that Haridas Thakur, being a Muslim, is chanting the holy names of Hindu gods, he called him and he told him that you are a Muslim, I will free you. He said, you're handsome, you are, you know, so strong looking, and you are born in such a illustrious family of Muslims, you know. So he said, we will free you. I will set you free. In fact, I'll give you all the support that you want, but you preach our dharma. Just stop chanting the Hindu name gods, names of God. And Haridas Thakur, of course, didn't agree. He said, no matter how much you chastise me, no matter what you do to me, I'm going to continue chanting. He said, I'm not even trying to chant. I'm just helpless. My body is, my mouth is just helplessly chanting the holy names of the Lord. So, of course, that's not our state, you know. We are helplessly attracted to sleep, we are helplessly attracted to, you know, all the, you know, habits of fulfilling the body's needs. But Haridas Thakur is helplessly attracted to chanting. And he was being beaten in 22 marketplaces. The statistics at that point of time is that, you know, the Muslim, the beaters, the executioners, they were giving Haridas Thakur the statistics of how many people have, because this beating is not like it started with Haridas Thakur, it had been from quite some time. So his statistics were that nobody lasts more than 4 or 5 marketplaces. They're dead. Or they just surrender, basically. You know. Haridas Thakur is being beaten in the first marketplace, nothing happens to him, constantly chanting the holy names of the Lord and smiling, you know. So the most intriguing thing for the executioner, it's okay that he is chanting the holy names of the Lord, but they just couldn't understand why he is smiling, you know. Second marketplace, chanting the holy name constantly and smiling. Third marketplace also constantly chanting and smiling. 22nd marketplace also constantly chanting and smiling. Now these people had no idea why he's smiling of all things, you know. If you look at this whole pastime from a point of view of a sadhaka, of a person who's trying to practice spiritual life, all of us also do get beaten, you know. We don't get beaten by whips, you know, we don't get beaten by people stop us from chanting or anything like that, but we get beaten by material energy of the Lord, you know. And it's had its own ways of beating us up. So when we get beaten, the first question is, do we chant? And even if we somehow manage to chant, the second question is, do we smile? You know. Most people either stop chanting or they stop smiling. You know. Most people, you know, if you're really, really, your loyalty to Krishna is very, very strong, then you definitely continue chanting. But it's very difficult to smile when you're getting beaten, you know. And that's what Haridas Thakur is. And that is what a serious sadhaka's life is. That means when we go through difficulties, of course, the beating of the 22 marketplaces of Haridas Thakur indicates, even if you're Namachari, you'll get beaten one day. What to speak of you and me, you know. We are nowhere close to Namacharya. Once in a few years, we may chant 64 rounds, whatever, you know. But that doesn't make us anywhere Namacharya. But the question, what it really indicates is that if Namacharya also gets beaten, that means all of us are bound to get beaten one day or the other, you know. Not because we are preaching, not because of anything like that, but just because we are in the material world. We will get beaten. But the question is, when we are beaten in the material world, it's not whether we are getting beaten. It is when we are getting beaten, you know. Whether is not a question only. Everybody will get beaten one day, you know. You may not get beaten in 22, you may get beaten in 1. And that 1 also is enough for us, you know, to give up chanting. There are so many people, 1 beating, not even 1 marketplace, 1 slash of the whip, they hang the beadbag and go away, you know, forever. So the question is, when does our loyalty break? Does our loyalty break with 1 whip? Does our loyalty break with 1 marketplace? Does our loyalty break with 2 marketplaces? Does our loyalty break with the 10th marketplace? That's what we need to figure out, you know. And the more than the loyalty breaking is, when we are chanting, when we are getting beaten, when we are experiencing the pain of material suffering, the question is, can we smile while chanting? That's what we as sadhakas have to answer for ourselves. When we look at the nature of the body, the nature of the body is to get old, diseased, pained. When the body gets old, do we become sad about it? You know, Manu, when his body was becoming older, he naturally became sad. Now, there are two types of sadness, two types of sorrow that comes into people's lives. The first type of sorrow is sorrow about something we lack in life. There are many people who are very sad that I can't do this or I can't have this in my life, you know. That creates sorrow. This is known as sorrow that is created by lack. This is an abhav. Abhav means lack of something in life. Abhav janya sorrow. Sadness that is created of due to lack of things, facilities, power, control, whatever. And then there is second type of sadness which is created by your thoughts. This is known as vichar janya sorrow. You know. So that means there are many people who feel sorrow due to lack of things, and there are many people who feel sorrow due to thoughts. Whenever there is sorrow due to lack of things, it creates hopelessness. Like, for example, today is 31st December, you know. There are two ways to see 31st December, you know. One way to see 31st December is, for a devotee, it's liberating. I don't have to suffer the way people are suffering, you know. Mad desire to enjoy, you know. That means they feel that 31st night is the night I can squeeze out all the pleasure of the year, you know. Full year's pleasure they want to squeeze out in one night. It's almost like, you know, Krishna's Rasa Leela lasted for one night of Brahma, you know. They feel the 31st night shouldn't get over only, you know. Go on and on and on, you know. And unfortunately, those who don't have that facility to enjoy, they feel hopeless. Mera jeevan ka kya hoga? What is going to happen to me? 31st night I can't enjoy, you know. What's going on in life? You know? This life is miserable, you know. That is the first type of sorrow. The second type of sorrow is sorrow due to thought. Manu, there was nothing lacking in his life. He had everything in his life. He was like the richest person in the world, the most powerful person in the world. And still, in spite of having everything in life, in spite of not lacking anything in life, he was still miserable. He was still sad. But this sadness was due to a thought, a vichar, a thought that though I have everything, I still have not focused on the goal of my life. That thought made him sad. And that thought made him hopeful. So the sorrow that is born out of things makes you hopeless. But the sorrow that is born out of thoughts, it actually makes you hopeful. It gives you great hope in life. And therefore Manu, he was easily able to renounce. He was easily able to detach himself from things and walk out. There are many people who are forced to detach from some things. Like for example, if you get sick, the doctor tells you, stop eating sweets. Stop eating, this, spicy item, whatever, Now, when the doctor tells you stop eating it, you may stop it, but are you detached from it? Nobody can say, doctor ne bola, sweet band karo, vairagya ho gaya sweets, I've developed complete detachment from sweets. It doesn't happen, You don't develop detachment just because you've been told to stop something. Detachment develops by voluntary thoughts. So Manu voluntarily gave up his position, his power, his, control, his wealth, because he developed a thought which made him unhappy. The thought that I have everything, but I'm not focused on the goal of life. Now I want to give up everything and completely focus on the goal of my life. And that's what a human being is supposed to really focus on. The more one has, the more difficult it is to give up. The human beings have a tendency to possess more and more and more. And in fact, when somebody comes to a certain stage in life where one realizes that I don't want to get into this fight of possessing, because when you're in this mood of wanting more and more and more, you tend to fight with others. You tend to grab from others. But when you come to a stage where I've already got the message of old age, I've already got the message of death, I've already got the message of, some higher thought has come into my mind. Now I don't want to focus on that aspect of grabbing. But now I want to focus on the higher aspect of life. And that's when one really starts thinking about, focusing on the deeper aspects of life. Actually, in the Chaitanya-charitamrita, there is a whole mood of how does one attract the mercy of the Lord. In fact, the Chaitanya-charitamrita gives some very interesting analysis of which are the kind of people that develop that mercy. I'm going to give you all three examples from the Chaitanya-charitamrita that actually talks about people who were no one. They were all no one, but they focused on their service to Krishna and their sincerity. And that sincerity really brought them their connection, their perfection of their lives. The first example in Chaitanya-charitamrita is of Dukhi. When Lord Chaitanya is, the Mahaprakash Leela of Lord Chaitanya is going on, and there's massive Abhishek of Lord Chaitanya happening. Thousands and thousands of devotees were getting pots of, water. And the Abhishek of Lord Chaitanya was happening. Lord Chaitanya didn't focus on all the devotees getting pots who were in front of him. He focused on one lady who was right in the end, near the Ganga, and actually filling the water. Her name was Dukhi. Lord Chaitanya said, get Dukhi here. Nobody knew who Dukhi was. And nobody had any idea how Lord Chaitanya came to know that there is somebody called Dukhi existing. Now, apparently, if you look at the word Dukhi, it's a very interesting word because we're talking about sorrow right now. There are people who are miserable because they have so much, but they still want so much. I must tell you all this. I was recently traveling, and in US there's a particular mall which is known as Costco. I don't know if you ever, If some of you all have gone there, you understand what Costco is. Costco is a huge, huge wholesale mall, you know. And I saw something very shocking there. I saw that there were literally hundreds of old people, above 80 plus, roaming around in Costco, you know, in that mall, with the racks, with those trolleys, you know. And they're roaming around aimlessly. Because they have nothing else to do. They just spend hours and hours and hours of the day roaming around in that mall, you know. And they're looking around like this, like this, like this, you know. I'm wondering what they're looking for, you know. They don't seem to be finding what they're looking for. Just looking around for hours and hours, it almost seemed they're looking for happiness, you know. Somehow, the world is filled with many dukkhis. Lord Chaitanya identified one dukkhi like that. But the interesting part about this particular dukkhi was that her name was dukkhi, but she was not really dukkhi. And the problem with all the dukkhis of this world is that their name is not dukkhi at all. Their name is something connected to sukhi, you know. But they're all dukkhis, you know. And this lady, she was just drawing water and handing it over. She's not even interested in coming in the front. But Lord Chaitanya identified her and told them, get her in the front. And he initiated her and named her Sukhi. What was the greatness of Dukhi? What was the speciality of Dukhi? What was in her devotion that attracted Lord Chaitanya? Two things. One is her sincerity and one is her consistency. She was not just sincere, but she was consistently sincere. It's not that one day I become very sincere and do solid service and the next day onwards gone, you know. It's not once. It's consistently sincere. And that's what attracted Lord Chaitanya to Sukhi, to make her Sukhi. As I said, the body of the human being is like a bhavan, is a house where you can do sadhana. So it's called a sadhana bhavan, basically. Now, generally, most houses have doors. Just imagine if there is a house without any doors. You will actually feel trapped over there, right? The one place where there are no doors is a grave. When they bury people inside a grave, they don't put a door over there, you know. It's not that the dead fellow has an option of getting out sometime, you know. They lock him completely. Four walls, that's all. He's locked. But the speciality of this house, the human body, is that it has a door. But the door is locked. Now, if the door is locked from outside, it becomes a prison. But if the door is locked from inside, it becomes a house, you know. And therefore, all of us have the option or the opportunity of opening the door and getting out. But most people are so much lost in the house. Huge house, just lost in the wonders of the house, they don't take out the time to find the door. Or whenever they come across a door, something happens. You know, just like before many years before we used to give the example of this fellow who was, you know, kept inside a jail and he was blindfolded. And he was told that if you find the door, you can go out. And what they did was they turned him around, and they told him, go find the door. So you'd, you know, roam around the corners, and exactly when you would come across the door, when you would come near the door, there would be a fly that would sit on his face. And you would swat the fly, you would be busy swatting the fly, you would miss the door. So every time he would come next to the door, again something would happen. One scratch would come, you know, he'd miss the door. So practically, this guy is roaming around constantly, but never found the door to go out. So human beings, human body is like that. It's designed a house with a door inside. But to be able to find that door inside, we shouldn't be distracted by too many things. Flies, you know, itching, you know, something tasty come up. We're just going on and on exploring other things. So the body has been designed by God and created by God. And the way in which Krishna has created this body is with dependence. And within that concept of dependence, lies the concept of independence. Now, when we are looking for independence from this body, from the material miseries of life, we have to depend on somebody else. No matter who you are, you have to depend. Unfortunately, most people in this world are so much self-dependent. They don't want to depend on anybody else. And therefore, they just cannot get out of the body. If you just look at from this point of view, if you look at Lanka, Lanka is in the middle of an ocean, surrounded by ocean water all around. Ravana is trapped inside that Lanka. So now, if you consider the ocean to be like a body, and the Atma is to be somebody trapped in Lanka, there's a whole 800 mile ocean to cross. But to cross the 800 mile ocean, you need to give up the pride of the body. This is known as Deha Abhiman. Ravan, when he saw his 14,000 soldiers being killed by Lord Ram, one person, one human being killing 14,000 people, 14,000 demons, Ravan had a thought in his mind. Maybe this is God. He had a thought. He had one small thought. Maybe this is God. But then, that thought didn't translate into faith. For most people, they do get these thoughts once in a while. Maybe there is God existing. But for the thought to get converted into faith, you need to have somebody who can help you develop that faith. And that is what Association of Devotees is about. Unfortunately, if you have knowledge, when you come in touch with devotees, they give you knowledge. And the knowledge leads to faith. And the faith leads to bhakti. But unfortunately, that one thought that Ravan had, he almost felt, maybe this is what I need to surrender to Ram. But that one thought didn't make him take shelter of somebody who could give him deeper knowledge. And therefore, he couldn't connect. There are many people in this world who seem to be knowledgeable, but they actually are not knowledgeable. They're actually ignorant. There was one guy who went to a old person in a village, and this old man was sitting on the veranda, and he was like, he would give lectures, he would, you know, big wise talks he would give, you know. So everybody would come to him for advice. So this young fellow, he came to this old man and he asked him, can you tell me how never to get angry? This old man, you know, he gave him some funda about anger. And he told him, remember one thing, don't be angry. This man, you know, he asked him, can you tell me how not to be angry? This old man said, what did I say? You could not hear what I told you. The way to be angry is, don't be angry. You know. This man, he said, can you tell me how never to be angry? You know. This old man, you know, he said, didn't you hear what I said? I said, don't be angry. This man said, can you tell me how not to be angry? This man was getting, old man was getting irritated. He said, I told you, don't be angry. You know. And then he again asked, can you tell me how not to get angry? This man took a stick and started chasing him. You know. He said, I told you, can't understand. Many times when you tell, it is very theoretical. When you show, it is very practical. You know. So there are many people who are very good in knowledge. They seem to be having a lot of knowledge. Who will tell you, do this. But they hardly can do it themselves. And therefore, that kind of knowledge is useless. And therefore, we need somebody in our life, a guru, a bona fide teacher, who can not just tell us, do it, but show us how to do it by his own example. And that is the role of a teacher, that is the role of a guru in our lives. So, if a human being is within this body, which is surrounded by, you know, all the sides by an ocean, which is like a prison, there has to be somebody who can show us the door, who can show us how to get out of this door. And therefore, many times the body is considered to be like a ship. And the Sadguru, the spiritual master, is considered to be like a captain. And when the captain, when the guru gives an instruction, one performs sadhana bhakti. And whatever instruction the guru gives us, one should follow.
in the olden times, the boats used to have sails. And the sail of the boat is the boat moves by wind, which moves the sail, basically, you know. And therefore, when the student follows the instruction of the spiritual master and does sadhana bhakti properly, that attracts the kripa of the spiritual master, which actually becomes a favorable wind that takes our boat ahead, takes our spiritual life ahead. And therefore, unless and until we have the kripa of a spiritual master who helps us sail our boat ahead, we just cannot go ahead in spiritual life. There was a sannyasi who went to a king, and the king welcomed the sannyasi, and the king asked him, please choose anything you want. I'll give you whatever you want. So then the sannyasi said, you tell me what you have to give me, you know. The king said, you can take anything from my treasury. The sannyasi told him, the treasury doesn't belong to you, it belongs to the state. So then the king said, you can take this palace, you know. He said, this palace also belongs to the people, you know. And then he said, you can take my body, you know. So sannyasi said, then, but your body belongs to your children, how can I take it, you know. Then he said, you only tell me what is worthy of giving, you know. I'll give you whatever you want. He said, the sannyasi told him, the only thing that is yours is your ego. The very feeling of ahankar, you know, that means I am the doer, you know. He said, you keep everything else, just give me your ego. That's what the spiritual master does. When we surrender ourselves to the spiritual master, that surrender essentially means surrendering our ego. And what does ego actually indicate? The ego indicates so many things which we consider to be the way of living life. You know, our own opinions, our own lifestyles, our own thought processes of how to be happy in life. What we need to give to the spiritual master is, give that ego to him. And let the spiritual master direct your life, indicate to you how to utilize your life in the right way. And then when you follow that, that's like a favorable wind that takes you ahead. And therefore, there are two things that spiritual life is about. Sadhana and kripa. Sadhana is the process of doing action as per the direction of the spiritual master. And kripa is mercy that comes as a result of that doing. When sadhana is done nicely, kripa comes. We don't have to do anything for kripa. Sadhana, we do. But kripa, we don't do. Kripa comes, basically, you know. So that means, when one thinks, which is more important? Sadhana is more important or kripa is more important? It's like asking a child, who is more important? Father is more important or mother is more important? You know? Both are important for the child. So, duty we learn from the father and love we learn from the mother. The mother really doesn't bother so much about duties. The mother is just more focused on giving love. You know? The father is heavily focused on duty. Do this, do that, do this, do that, you know. And therefore, in reality, from a realistic point of view, if you really see what we do as sadhana bhakti is actually useless. And the quality of our sadhana I'm talking about, you know. We may practically do a lot of things in terms of quantity, but the quality of what we do is completely useless, you know. So if purely based on sadhana, whether we deserve to go back to the spiritual world or no, definitely we don't deserve. But along with sadhana, if there is mercy also, then that combination makes us qualified to go back to the spiritual world. And therefore, in one sense, we are all kripavadis. There are mayavadis and there are kripavadis, you know. There are mayavadis. Mayavadis are those who are completely shun away the existence of God and they blaspheme God. And kripavadis are those who are completely focused on getting the mercy of the Lord. Because they realize that nothing we can do on our own. You know? Mayavadis feel that everything we can do on our own. We don't need God. I am only God, basically. You know? But kripavadis feel that I can't do much on my own. I will try. But ultimately it depends on the mercy of the Lord. So when we come across obstacles in life, especially when we are practicing our sadhana bhakti, there will be something or the other that will come as problems or obstacles. But when we come across obstacles in life, there are two types of obstacles. There is problems that we can solve, but there are sometimes there is no problems only. Like for example, if you look at Manu's family, Manu and his great-great grandson, Dhruva Maharaj, you know, in the same family. Now, Dhruva came across a problem in his life. Massive problem. What was the problem that Dhruva had? Dhruva had his mother, Suniti, and his stepmother, Suruchi. He wanted to sit on his father's lap, you know, Uttanapad's lap. And Suruchi said, you can't sit unless you are born from my womb. Now, here was a problem that Dhruva was facing, which was intense anger and envy towards Suruchi, basically. Now, these are two people in one family that are trying to achieve God. Manu had no such problem. It's not that somebody told him not to sit on his father's lap, you know. Manu could sit on Brahma's lap anytime, you know. It is not that he had problems with his family. His wife was not cooperative. His children are not cooperative. Nothing like that. Manu, in fact, had no problem in his life. But when you have no problem in your life, you still have one problem. The problem is how to perfect my life. That's the problem. You know? So it's not that Manu had no, it's not that Manu didn't have a problem. He had a higher problem to solve. Dhruva had a lower problem to solve. So all of us, we are either in the situation of Manu or we are in the situation of Dhruva. There are people who have intense problems in this world only, you know. Enough problems, and they just can't focus on spiritual life. And there are some people who have no problems in this world, but they still create a problem by saying that I don't have a purpose of my life. I have not achieved the purpose of my life. And that's the way to look at it. What is Varnashram? Prabhupada said Varnashram is like a platform to get into the train of bhakti. Varnashram is a platform where once you are in the right Varna and right ashram, what happens is your mind becomes peaceful. And with a peaceful mind, what you can do? Practice bhakti. There are many people who get into the Varnashram platform, but they don't get into the train only. They say platform achha hai. Remain in the platform only. You know, everything is so nice here. You know? So the purpose of the platform is to get into the train. You know, without the platform, it's a struggle. Of course, in Bombay, people become experts in getting into the train without a platform. You know, so in Bombay, probably the example is not relevant. But to get into the train, if there is a platform, it's great. It's much less effort. But the platform itself is not the solution. The platform is just a means to get into the train that leads us to the perfection of our lives. And therefore, we have Dhruva. With one incident, he felt so insulted. So the tendency to feel insulted is a universal tendency, whether it is in adults, whether it is in small children, you know. And nowadays in children, it is much more intense, you know, than before. Small children can just call up the police and tell, father insulted me, and the fellow is in jail, you know. So abuse is not just from outsiders, it can be from insiders also. Anybody does anything, branded, you know, in one category. So basically, the thing is now, the concept of insult, the concept of revenge, the attitude of taking revenge. So this kind of attitude is there in everybody. But fortunately, in Dhruva's life, he had Suniti. So Niti means advice. And Ruchi means desires. So every human being has to decide which of the two he wants to focus on. King Uttanapad had Suruchi and Suniti. He had to focus on his desires or he had to focus on good advice. You know, Uttanapad, the king, decided to focus on Ruchi, on pleasures of life. And Dhruva decided to focus on Suniti's advice, you know, the direction of life. And that's exactly what choice we have in our personal lives. Either we can focus on pleasures or we can focus on direction. And what apparently seems to be Suniti, good direction, is not always pleasurable. Dhruva went through 5 months of intense torture. You know, 1 month, you know, just standing without just eating fruits and you know, leaves, whatever, you know. But the point is that when Dhruva went through his 5 months of torture, he didn't think, "Arey, Suruchi achha hai, Suniti ne kya advice diya? You know? Suniti's advice gave him 5 months of torture. But Suruchi's association is giving Uttanapad pleasure, basically, you know. Unfortunately, the way we have to see this whole thing is from the point of view of not the struggle, but from the point of view of destination. When there is struggle, definitely it is painful. But after the struggle, there is a destination which is higher, which is more important. And therefore, Dhruva, he got darshan of the Lord when he was a child, 5-year-old child. Being insulted by his stepmother, he went out, he got darshan of the Lord in 5 months sharp. But Manu had no such reason to go out, you know. And therefore, Manu went out when he was thousands of years old, basically, you know. Apparently, if you see it from that point of view, Dhruva was more fortunate. Because he had a reason to go out today. Manu had no such reason. So he had no such desperation to go out today, you know. So he went out aramse. So all of us also are in the same boats, you know. We need to find a reason like Dhruva to go out. When I'm saying go out, doesn't mean that leave your family and go out. What it really means is that seek God, basically, you know. So either we have to have a reason like Dhruva to seek God, or we have to wait for the right time to seek God. Most people wait for the right time to seek God. We give them Bhagavad Gita, we say, "Arey, when we become 60, we will take," you know. What is the guarantee you will become 60? At least in Manu's life, he had guarantee, you know, thousands of years, so he will live. You know. But in our case, we don't have a guarantee also. So Dhruva's formula is better. Find a reason to go out, right? And of course, the material world gives you enough reasons. Your family itself will give you enough reasons, you know. And your boss in the company will give you a lot of reasons to, you know, seek God. And of course, your own health, your own body, your own mind. You know, today's number one reason to seek God is depression. You know, I'm feeling lonely. Perfect. If you're feeling lonely, that means you need somebody in your life. And that's exactly the reason we need to seek shelter of somebody higher, right? Instead of seeking shelter of somebody lower, we seek shelter of somebody higher, basically. So, the thing is, there are people who seem to be having a lot. But in spite of having a lot, they create a hunger for seeking God. Just like a river. A river is full of water already. Why does it go to the ocean? When river already is full of water, why does it need to go to the ocean? Because the ocean has much more water, you know. But if you look from a logical point of view, the river, though it has unlimited water, it still goes to the ocean because it realizes that its water can get over any day. Only when I go to the ocean, that's the place where water never gets over. And that's what spiritual life is about. All of us are like rivers. We have something in our life. Manu had a lot. We have less. There are rivers like Ganga, which has unlimited water. And there are rivers which are like trickles, you know. There are certain rivers that are not visible also today, nowadays, you know. So this is the range of rivers that are there in this world. So, but every river, no matter if it is big or it is small, it is running towards the ocean because it knows that that's where I will last permanently. So all of us are like rivers. We may have a lot or we may not have much. But the fact is that we need to go to the ocean of the Lord's mercy. And that's where our permanent security lies. That's where our permanent, perfection lies. Dhruva didn't have much, ran to the ocean. Manu had a lot, still ran to the ocean. And therefore, that is the range of sadhana, that sadhakas that we have in this world. When Manu chose which place to go to perfect his life, it is very interesting the choice that he made. He chose to go to Naimasharanya. Naimasharanya is a place of sadhana, is a place of sadhakas, is a place where sages go to try to perfect their lives. Manu could have easily gone to Kashi, a place like Kashi is where you don't need to do anything. Anybody who dies in Kashi goes back. You know, Lord Shiva personally comes and chants the name of Vishnu in their ears. There are many people who love to die in Kashi. Why? They don't have to do anything. So, jaga baith jaane ka. Apne aap jayenge back to Godhead. But there are many people who choose to go to Naimasharanya. Why did Manu go to Naimaisharanya and not go to Kashi? Why did Manu choose a path of sadhana and not just a path of kripa? The reason is because when we are looking at pleasing the Lord, it's not just about mercy. It's about your effort also. Krishna is pleased more by our efforts than just by giving mercy directly. If you study any devotee of the Lord, there has to be efforts before mercy comes. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a story of this devotee named Kalidas, you know. And this devotee, I mean, he was one of those devotees who loved to eat the remnants of the devotees and take the dust of the devotees. Now, Kalidas, he had different ways of taking dust of the devotees and different ways of taking remnants of the devotees. Sometimes by asking, sometimes by forcing, sometimes by stealing, you know. But somehow, hook or crook, he got the mercy of the devotees, got the remnants of the devotees. He practically made sure he got the remnants and the dust of every devotee in Bengal. Not just big devotees. He just didn't aim at the top devotees. Made a list of 10 top devotees in Bengal, you know. Sirf unka dust lena hai. Aisa kuch nahi. Every devotee in Bengal, he got the dust and remnants of, you know. After he got the remnants of every single devotee in Bengal, then he went to Jagannath Puri. And there he aimed at the top. There he went to get dust of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet, you know. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go to Jagannath temple. Before he would enter the temple, he would wash his feet. And, you know, his servant Govinda would pour water and Mahaprabhu would wash his feet and then go in. This guy, Kalidas, he goes, and while Mahaprabhu's lotus feet is being washed, he puts his hand straight, you know, and drinks. One sip, Mahaprabhu doesn't say anything. Second sip, Mahaprabhu still doesn't say anything. Third sip, Mahaprabhu says, bas ho gaya, go now. Yeah. Now, it's a very interesting thing to observe Lord Chaitanya's actions, you know. Lord Chaitanya never allowed anyone to take dust from his lotus feet. Never allowed, you know. In fact, one person tried during the Gundicha, washing. And Mahaprabhu went and complained to Swarup Damodar and told him, look at your Bengali Vaishnavas, what kind of people they are, you know. So Mahaprabhu was quite upset if anybody touched his feet or drank the dust, drank the water from his which washed his feet. But when it came to Kalidas, Mahaprabhu allowed him to drink 3 times. Why? Because Kalidas had already shown his sincerity and consistency before. Aisa nahi ki pehla attempt seedha Mahaprabhu ke upar, you know. He had already taken the dust of almost every devotee in Bengal and taken the remnants of every devotee in Bengal. Mahaprabhu had already seen his sincerity. And not just seen his sincerity, but he also seen his consistency, you know. Many people, as I said, are sincere once. I mean, I know people, one day they hear a lecture about dust of lotus feet. Aisa pakadne lagte sabka dust, you know. And after next day gone, that fever is gone of catching dust, you know. One day you hear about glories of Mahaprasad and remnants of devotees, you attack everybody's plate. Next day gone, you know. Where is the consistency? Kalidas not just was sincere, but consistently sincere. And that's why Mahaprabhu allowed him to, you know, take the dust of his lotus. In fact, he offered him his own remnants also. So therefore, when we look at the concept of kripa, kripa comes after enough efforts have been done. Kripa, when we say that I deserve kripa, you deserve it after a certain point of time of you putting your efforts. And that is why we need to focus on the concept of getting kripa. Why did Manu choose to go to Naimaisharanya of all places? The reason Manu chose to go to Naimaisharanya of all places is because Manu thought, I can't practice sadhana on my own. I need a sangha of devotees who can help me stay inspired. Now, who was Manu? Manu was not an ordinary person. He was an exalted personality. If he felt he needs association of devotees to perfect his life, who are we? You know, we definitely need association of devotees who can feed us good quality prasad in the form of Krishna Katha, in the form of nourishment, in the form of, you know, good quality nourishment. You know, I always give this example. This is one of the most amazing examples that I've ever read in my life. And I just feel so inspired whenever I speak this also. A devotee, a powerful devotee is like an elephant. Huge. And his appetite to eat Krishna Katha is like an elephant's appetite. You know? If you've ever seen an elephant eat, 150 kilos at one shot. That's the kind of appetite that an elephant has. Massive appetite. And the elephant can go on and on and on eating, you know. So devotees, big devotees are like this elephant. They have massive appetites to eat. They can just eat on and on and on. Pure Krishna Katha, you know. And when they're eating pure Krishna Katha, if you look at an elephant's mouth, the way it is structured, you know, it's not like the perfectly designed mouth. It's like a little, it's like this, shaped like this. So naturally, when you put something into the mouth, a lot of things fall out from the mouth, you know. And what, with whatever little falls out from the mouth, millions of ants can survive. So pure devotees of the Lord are like the elephant. They have massive appetites to eat Krishna Katha, and little falls out from their mouth. And whatever little, you know, nectar falls out from their mouth, millions of ants like us can survive, you know. It's not that what comes out from the mouth is the only thing they have. Stock khatam, you know. What comes out from their mouth is like few particles of what they have actually digested Krishna Katha. And that is enough for millions of ants like us to survive. So when we are practicing sadhana bhakti, for us to remain inspired in the process of sadhana bhakti, we need to go to the association of elephant-like Vaishnavas. I'm not talking about size. I'm talking about appetite, the ability to digest Krishna Katha, you know, and their ability to handle so much of quality Krishna Katha. Unfortunately, today, for us to be able to handle good quality Krishna Katha, we can't do it. Today, sattvic food or, you know, mode of goodness food is considered to be unpalatable. You know, you have to put masala in it, you know, you have to put chok in it. You know. So when we give pure Krishna Katha, people can't handle it. Thoda masala dal ke dona, you know. So then the devotees have to put a little masala, put little cashew nuts, put little, you know, badam in it, you know. And then we say, wow, it makes sense, you know. And for us, devotees do it. Ideally, for themselves, they don't need to do it. But for us to be able to digest that good quality, sattva-gun type food, Krishna Katha, devotees, you know, embellish it with some ingredients so that we can handle it. So what we taste is not the sattva-gun food, we taste the masala. And we say, achha hai, bahut achha hai. But give them pure Krishna Katha, you'll say, nahi hota, jamta nahi hai, you know. And that's the greatness of the devotees of the Lord who are merciful to us and they help us with Krishna Katha. So, when we look at different devotees doing sadhana, they do for different amounts of time, you know. We practice sadhana for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. Manu practices sadhana for 65,000 years, you know. Now, what is the calculation? How does Krishna divide the time, you know? I mean, is our 20 years of practice equivalent to Manu's 65,000 years of practice, you know? Whatever your capacity is, that much is your sadhana. Beyond your capacity is Kripa. And therefore, where sadhana ends, Kripa begins. There are people who are very powerful like Manu, whose sadhana is also very powerful. For them, their need for Kripa is minimal. But for people like us, our sadhana is so pathetic that the quantity of Kripa that we need is much, much more, you know. So when a cow sees a calf coming, as soon as the cow sees a calf, she starts lactating, you know, milk starts coming out. It doesn't mean the calf has done any effort. Therefore, sadhana is just making best use of your capacity. And beyond your capacity, Kripa will flow. And therefore, that is the way in which we understand it. So we keep doing our sadhana. And that just when Krishna sees our effort, it's like a cow sees a calf. It's not that the calf has done some great effort, but the milk starts coming automatically, you know. And that is how the Kripa comes automatically. Therefore, all of us in our personal lives, we are all trying to practice our spiritual lives. We are all trying to, you know, develop our sadhana bhakti. Here, Brahmaji by the grace of Krishna, he has had this realization that Krishna is so merciful that he has given everything to us. What has Krishna given us? Krishna has given us his whole lifetime of leelas to meditate on. He has come in the form of Ram, he has come in the form of Narasimha, he has come in the form of Krishna, he has come in the form of Lord Chaitanya. Now we might wonder, why so many leelas are there? Why so many incarnations are there? Why so many pastimes keep happening? You know, they all keep happening just for one purpose, to give us more memories. All of us in the material world are filling our minds with memories. Every 31st night, people are wanting to flood their mind with good memories. Last year, itna achha tha. Yes, I'll or be achha hona chahiye. So everyone is trying to fill their mind with memories. Krishna has given us unlimited pastimes to fill our mind with memories. The question is, what type of memories do we want to fill our mind with? Do we want to fill our mind with mundane memories? Or do we want to fill our mind with Krishna Katha? There are many people who say, "Arey, itna pastime hai, kaise yaad rakhenge? How to remember so many pastimes?" It's not the question of remembering all the pastimes. It is a question of filling your mind with Krishna's pastimes. Now, whatever your capacity is, remember. If you have capacity to remember two pastimes, remember that too. You know, instead of remembering one pastime and one time pass, you know. So the purpose of the mind, the purpose of Krishna Leela is to fill our minds with memories. So let us all in this particular day, not exactly New Year for us in that sense, but whatever it is, we use every opportunity to remember Krishna's pastimes. And the more we remember Krishna's pastimes, our time pass will become less. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.